Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September the 18th, and we are beginning Parshas Va'era on page 318. Now, the last thing that happened was that Moshe and Aaron were met by Dathan and Aviram after they had come out from Paro, and the Shotrim, the foreman of the Jewish people, the Jews, they were beaten for the Jews not having been able to fulfill their quota of bricks. And they said to Moshe and Aaron that it's their fault, because they have now, since they went in and asked Paro for the Jews to go free, that made Paro have ill will towards the Jewish people, where until then, although the Jews were slaves, but there was some goodwill and there was some rapport between Paro and the Jews. There was a working relationship. Everybody knew where everybody stood, and therefore the beatings were not so common. It wasn't, you know, the slaves were slaves, they worked, and that was it. But now, because you asked for freedom, therefore the Paro now is reacting with a heavy hand and making things very, very difficult for the Jewish people, very painful for the Jewish people. So Moshe then goes back to Hashem, and he says to Hashem, why did you do evil to this nation? Why did you send me? To which, and then he says that ever since you sent me to Paro, things have gotten a lot worse. Mm-hmm. To which Hashem says that now you will see what I'm going to do to Paro. And now you'll see, and that you'll, that with a strong hand he will send them from his land. So we explained last week that now you will see, the double meaning is that first of all, now that Paro has acted the way he has acted and he's shown his true colors, that gives me license to really beat him up, which Rav Hashem is going to do with the 10 plagues, with the Esar Makos. But also you, Moshe, now you'll see what's going to happen to Paro, but you will not see the conquest of Eretz Israel, because you questioned me. Here in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, Hashem continues with his admonishment of Moshe for having questioned Hashem. Now we know that Moshe is the greatest prophet to ever live. Moshe gets closer to Hashem than any other human being ever has and ever will. Whether he reached it at this point or not, it's arguable that he had not yet reached that point, that doesn't happen until Matan Torah, until the Jews get the Torah. But at the same time, we're talking about Moshe. So Moshe is the greatest of them all. And here, Hashem is going to compare Moshe to the Avos, to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And he's going to show Moshe where he is lacking as compared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, when we use the word lacking when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously we mean on a very, very subtle level, because Moshe is the greatest. So whatever lack there is, we're talking about something which is far beyond our comprehension. Plus, if you're comparing any human being to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, people are going to be found lacking, because Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were so great themselves. So we're comparing giants to giants. And Hashem is going to show Moshe where he is lacking as compared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That doesn't mean to say that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are greater than Moshe, but in a certain respect, he's going to show where Moshe, where they were greater than he was. Yeah.
Do we just then assume that Moshe knew the whole past with our people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least as much as we do.
And Moshe had a lot of compassion. The struggles of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were different, because they had their own texts, the texts for their children,
right.
The builders of the tribe.
Okay, so it's hard to compare Moshe to the Avos, because it's hard to compare. They're dealing with very different struggles. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are struggling to create something, to create a nation, to bring a nation into existence. That's what Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are doing. Moshe is leading this nation. He's about to lead this nation.
And he felt for that, you know, like when he killed the Mitzri, because he was leading it. He had tremendous love for his people.
Right.
The way he defended them, all this is always different.
No one
erased my name from the top.
No one is saying that Moshe was a bad person.
No, no, no.
But Hashem is about to point out that Moshe was lacking in one thing, as we're about to show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Moshe, we don't know what happened subsequently, meaning that this may be the only time that Moshe showed this lack, and then he learned his lesson and grew from it. That's very possible. But this is going to be an unusual thing in Tanakh, where we're going to find an outright comparison between the Avos and Moshe, between the greatest and the greatest. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were it's hard to compare anybody to them because they started everything off. How do you compare anybody to Avraham? Avraham had no precedent to follow. Avraham, on his own, recognized Hashem and had to battle a world that was completely against everything that he stood for. That's Avraham. How can you compare anybody to Avraham? In a certain way, no one can ever reach the level of Avraham. On the other hand, how can you compare anybody to Moshe? Moshe is the greatest prophet. Moshe gets closer to Hashem than anybody can possibly do. Moshe is the humblest of all men. Moshe is the one through whom we get the Torah. It's very difficult to compare anybody to Moshe. So you're talking about someone who is incomparable being compared to someone who is incomparable. So the comparison is being made only on one level, and that's it, as we're about to show right now. But this is an admonishment to Moshe. So the pasuk begins, Vayidaber Elokim el Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Vayomer Elav, and he said to him, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Now remember, we have talked about in Parashat Shmos how it's funny how the name of the book, the name of the Sefer is Shmos, ostensibly because of the names of the Jewish people. Yet, the entire parasha of Shmos focuses on the names of Hashem. Hashem being called Elohim, Hashem being called the real name of Yud-Keh-Vav-Keh, the name of Ekyeh, we had the name of Aleph-Dalid, we had various names of Hashem being used. Here, in this very first pasuk of Va'era, it says, Vayidaber Elohim El Moshe, Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem. Elohim speaks to Moshe and says, I am Hashem, using a different name. And then in the very next pasuk, Vo'eiro el Avraham el Yitzchak vel Yaakov bekel shakai. I appear to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov with kel shakai, which is another name for Hashem. Ushmi Hashem, and my name Hashem, lo nodati lahem, I did not make known to them. Hashem here is clearly drawing attention to his various names. And then he goes on. V'gam ha-kimosi es-brisi itam, and I established my covenant with them, Moses lohem es-eretz Canaan, to give them the land of Canaan, es-eretz megurehem asher garuva, their land of their sojourning, which means their wandering, that they visited in it. They didn't live there. In other words, they didn't settle there. It wasn't theirs to settle. They were there temporarily. I've also heard the groans of the Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Yitzrayim, Ma'avidim Osam, that the Egyptians are working them. Vo'ez kor es b'risin, I remembered my covenant. Lachin, therefore, emor livnei Yisrael, say to the Bnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, using that name of Hashem. And here we have the four Lashonos Shel Geula, the four languages of redemption. I will take you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will save you from their work. and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, uvishvatim gedolim, and with great judgments. Vilakachti eschem li la'am, and I will take you for me for a nation. There's the four languages of vahutseisi, I will take you out. Vihitzalti, I will save you. Vigalti, I will redeem you. Vilakachti, I will take you. Vayisi lachem le'lokim, and I will be for you as a God. Now it says Elokim here, not Hashem. Vidatem, and you will know, ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, hamotzi eschem mitachas sivlos mitzroyim, that takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt. Vehevesi eschem el ha'aretz, and I will bring you to the land, asher nasasi es yodi, that I lifted my hand, lases osa, to give it, l'Avraham, l'Yitzchak, l'Yaakov, to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I will give it to you, Morasha, as an inheritance, as a heritage, they say in the English. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Vayidaber Moshe, Kena b'nei Yisrael. So Moshe went and repeated these words to the b'nei Yisrael, as Hashem told them to. V'lo shamuel Moshe, but they didn't listen to Moshe. Why? Mikotzer ruach, from shortness of breath, u'me'avodah kasha, and from hard work. Yes, this is the Kotzer Ruach that Rabbi Feldman refers to when he says the Kotzer Ruach Shabbos. This is it. The Kotzer Ruach, Omei Avodah Kasha, and because of hard work.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
How come it says there's four Loshonos? There's really five.
Yeah. Yes. So we're going to discuss that.
Okay.
A very good observation. Okay, so let's look at this again. What are these various names that are being used by Hashem? If Elohim, as you know, tends to mean Hashem's midah, his character trait of judgment, harshness, meaning not harshness as mean, but as in exacting. And then the name of Hashem tends to mean mercy. Vaydaber Elokim el Moshe, Elokim, which sounds like with judgment, speaks to Moshe. And to accentuate that point, the word Vayedaber, as opposed to Vayomer, generally means speaking harshly. Dibur versus Amira, Daber versus Emor, Vayedaber Hashem or Vayomer Hashem. Vayedaber tends to mean a harsh way of speaking, a strong way of speaking. Whereas Vayomer tends to mean a soft way of speaking. So, Vayedaber Elokim, with the name of judgment, and with the harsh way of speaking, speaks El Moshe to Moshe. Vayomer Elov, so it switches the verb, to a softer way of speaking. He said to him, Ani Hashem, without judgment, with mercy. So in mid-sentence, we switch from Vayedaber Elokim to Vayomer and Hashem.
It sounds like he's getting his attention.
Okay.
But then you can be softer.
So you're saying that it sounds like, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's like when you're calling your child who is not listening, and you're calling Moshe, Moshe, Moshe! And then he looks up, and then you speak softly. That's what you mean?
That's how it sounds.
That's what it sounds like, right? Okay, I happen to have a son named Moshe. But that doesn't explain the beginning.
No, it doesn't.
No, but Vayedaber is when he says, as far as you're concerned right now, because you lack this, so I'm speaking harshly to you, but the message I'm giving to Bnei Yisrael, that's the soft one.
Okay. That could be, it would just mean then in the introductory pasuk, it has both points, even though part of the next, the question is, at what point does the message switch from Moshe to the Jewish people?
Yeah.
Okay. But you're suggesting that towards Moshe it is harsh,
right,
and towards the Jewish people it is soft.
Yeah.
The thing is that if you look carefully, it also repeats, not only does it repeat the verb of Vayidaber and Vayomer, and it repeats the subject of Elohim and Moshe, Elohim and Hashem, but the object is also changed. It says Vayomer Elohim el Moshe, Vayomer elav. He said to him.
Mm-hmm.
There it doesn't repeat. It could have said Vayidaber Elohim el Moshe, Vayomer el Moshe, Ani Hashem, or just Vayomer Ani Hashem.
Yes.
Apparently, the Torah felt compelled to repeat the object, but with a pronoun, a love to him rather than Moshe. So that also has to be understood. It sounds like they're both directed at Moshe.
Okay.
So the Kliyakar, one of the commentaries in the Mikros Kedolos, explains as follows. He says that Moshe was about to be rebuked because he questioned Hashem. The rebuke he's going to get, which Rashi explains, is that the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, never questioned Hashem. For all of the trials, tribulations they went through, for all the difficulties they went through, and they did not have easy lives, none of them had easy lives, but they never questioned Hashem, even though Hashem told them, you're going to get this land, you're going to have children, things are going to be great, things are going to be wonderful, but they weren't wonderful. And yet they never questioned Hashem. And here, Moshe hits his first roadblock. He comes in and says, Paro, let the Jews go. And it fails, and things get worse. So his first setback, and he's questioning Hashem. So Hashem is taking Moshe to task and telling him, this is not the stock you come from. You come from patriarchs who didn't question me for years. For each of their lives, which was over 100 years, they didn't question me. And here you have one setback, and boom, you question me. That's the admonishment he's about to give him. But the Kliyakar says that Moshe did have reason to doubt his own worthiness in being the leader of the Jewish people. As we know, he didn't feel that he would deserve to be the leader of the Jewish people. He did feel that it should not have gone to him, it should have gone to Aaron. He did feel that he was lacking. So as much as Hashem said, you're the man, you're the one who's going to lead, Moshe didn't want to accept it. Now let's understand that. We know, and Moshe for sure knew, that if you're trying to offer me a position because you think that I'm the right person for the position, I can refuse, and as much as you try to convince me that I'm the right person, I can say back to you, yeah, but you don't really know me. If you really knew me, you would understand I'm not the right person for the position. I know myself better than you know me. And that's a valid point. Because how can you know me better than I know me? But Hashem knows me better than I know me.
Mm-hmm.
Moshe knew that. So if Moshe is refusing and saying, I'm not worthy, I'm not up to the task, and Hashem says, I say you are, Moshe was no fool. Moshe understood that Hashem knows Moshe better than Moshe knows Moshe. So if Hashem says you're up to the task, you're up to the task. If Hashem says your past is not a problem, then your past is not a problem. You can't say, well, Hashem, but you don't really know me. Hashem,
yeah,
there's something you don't know about me. Moshe knew that wasn't so. So when we say that Moshe was refusing because Moshe felt he wasn't worthy, it's not that he was questioning whether Hashem understood whether Moshe was worthy or not. Of course Hashem understood that Moshe was worthy. But Moshe did not feel that he could maintain his worthiness. Meaning, he felt that the one thing Hashem does not control is our free will. That's the one thing Hashem does not control. He does give us our own ability to choose. And even if Hashem says about a certain person, you are worthy, but if that person then falls down on the job and does not live up to what he's capable of doing, then he's no longer worthy. That can happen. Hashem can choose a certain person and say, you're going to be my king because You're worthy. You're the most worthy person. As Hashem said to Shaul, you are the most worthy person, which he was at that time. But then he sinned. And when he sinned, he lost loyalty. It was torn from him, torn from his family. That wasn't because Hashem made a mistake. It's because Shaul was the most worthy, but then unfortunately failed. Again, we're talking about a person like Shaul, so his failures and our failures can't even mention the same sentence. His failures, we should only deserve to have his failures because of the level he was on. But nevertheless, on his level, he failed. So it's not that Hashem's choice was wrong, but it's that the person didn't live up to it. Moshe felt that he was unable to live up to, he was not going to live up to Hashem's expectations. So when Moshe questions Hashem, and Hashem is going to rebuke Moshe, Moshe does have the excuse of being able to say to Hashem, I told you I couldn't live up to it. I knew that my yiras Hashem, my fear of heaven, my conviction to do the right thing, I knew that I was lacking. I knew that I would not be able to live. I knew that I would fail. And Hashem can't argue with him about that because he did say to Hashem, I can't do it. On the other hand, as his potential, the potential of who he is, that Hashem, Moshe has no excuse. Hashem knows Moshe better than Moshe knows Moshe. Mm-hmm. So Hashem can say to Moshe, I know you. I knew you when I chose you, and I knew you could do it. I knew your potential. So you can't tell me that you weren't worthy based on your abilities. So in that regard, Moshe has no excuse. So the Kli Yakar explains there's a dual admonishment. One is harsh and one is soft. The harsh one is to Moshe, the name Moshe, what Moshe represents, who Moshe is, what his abilities are. Your name is your essence. It's what you stand for. It's what you can be. So Hashem says, Vayidaber Elokim el Moshe. Elokim with judgment. Vayidaber speaks harshly to who? To Moshe. Because Moshe, I knew you could do it. And I'm not wrong. I knew you better than you know you. You have no excuse for this. On the other hand, Vayomer in love, he said to him, in a soft way, Ani Hashem, I am God, with mercy, knowing that you did tell me that you felt that you were not going to be able to make the right choices. In that regard, you have at least some level of excuse. The Kli Yakar doesn't say it exactly the way I presented it. He says that the soft part of Hashem's admonishment is because Moshe did have the excuse that he is kevad peh, that he has difficulty as a speech impediment. And in that regard, at least, Moshe was correct. I'm saying it slightly differently than the Kli Yakar because it's hard for me to accept the fact that the speech impediment was so significant, given the fact that Hashem told him he can do it. If Hashem says you can do it, that means you can do it with a speech impediment or with any other impediment, because Hashem said you can do it. So that's what he understands it. Later on, this is going to come up, this speech impediment thing is going to come up twice more in the very near future in Vayera. So we'll have to deal with that then as well. Let's start with Clary.
He sees Moshe like a true leader, really cares about the people.
And that's a nice explanation. Very nice.
So the softness is because even though Moshe is speaking back to him, he's saying, well, our people are suffering.
Okay,
so maybe the softness has to do with because Moshe is speaking okay. Off, but he loves Moshe because he's loving us.
That's very nice. That's a nice explanation. So you are suggesting that it would be similar to, let's say, a teacher that is punishing a student, and one of the student's friends steps in to defend the student that's being punished and speaks harshly to the teacher. So on the one hand, the student has to be admonished because they can't speak harshly to a teacher, but on the other hand, they are doing something admirable and sticking up for the for the other student, for the friend. So there's, in the same act, there is something wrong. There's a disrespect to the teacher, but at the same time, there's the compassion for the fellow student. Right.
And that's what makes him such a believer.
Okay, that's very nice. That's very nice. Okay. So then Hashem says, I appeared to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov with the name Kel Shakai. Kel Shakai, which we talked about before, and we'll reiterate it in a moment. Ushmi Hashem, and my name Hashem, lo nodati lahem, I did not make known to them. Rashi emphasizes here, and I believe that the English supports this, yeah, I did not make myself known to them. That it can't be, it can't mean that Hashem never told Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that his name is Hashem. Because it's not so. If you look back in Parshios, Lech Lecha, Vayerach, Hayesara, Toldos, Vayetze, you'll find the name Hashem used frequently. So it's not that he's saying they didn't know my name. They only knew the name Kel Shakai. They didn't know my real name. That's not so. They did know his real name. Rather, it means I didn't make my name known to them, which means I didn't act with them based on the name Hashem. As we said in Parsha Shmos, that the names of Hashem reflect how He is revealing Himself to us at that moment. And the name of Hashem, of Yud Kei Vav Kei, given that that is the most, the name of Hashem that reflects His essence more than any other one that we are aware of. Of course, we can't know His essence, but it gives us a greater glimpse than any other, and it reflects the His mercy that they never saw. They never saw Hashem act with them using the name Hashem. Why? Don't we find some cases of mercy and compassion from Hashem towards the Avos? But the name of Hashem, since it also, Yudke Vavke, since it also reflects as much of His essence as we are going to ever know, it, therefore, it also is the name of Emes, of truth. Because really, what is Emes? Emes is Hashem. Hashem is Emes. What is real, what is true, is Hashem. The Gemara tells us the name of Hashem is Shalom. The signet, the seal of Hashem is Emes. The seal is a little bit less than a name. The name is stronger than that. But the Emes is the seal of Hashem. Hashem never made His words true with the Avos, because He told them they're going to get the land, but they didn't get it in their day. He told them, you're going to be a great nation. They were not a great nation in their day. Hashem never completed, never fulfilled His word to them while they were still alive. As Rashi explains, that's what it means over here, that I never made my name Hashem known to them. Because I told them things, but I didn't carry them out yet. So they didn't see it. The name that I did use with them is Kel Shakai. Now, what is Kel Shakai? The Gemara tells us, and I told you this when we first saw the name Kel Shakai, that the world was, when Hashem first created the world, He created the universe, and He created like two balls of yarn that they were expanding. It was yarn, you know, like if you're winding up a ball of yarn, and it's expanding, and expanding, and expanding, and expanding, and then Hashem, it says He was Goer, but He yelled at it, and it stopped. He said, die. That's enough. Die. That's enough. Kel Shakai. She, that, die. It's enough. That says, that's enough. And we explain that, what does that mean? That's strange. So, you know, something about the creation of the world, or creation of the universe. What does that mean? So we explained that when Hashem created the world, when He created the world means the universe, He created physicality. And physicality denies Hashem. Hashem exists, and the physicality of the world, where's Hashem? I don't see Him. I don't feel Him. I can't touch Him. I can't hear Him. can't smell him. What Hashem? One can deny Hashem. One can say there is no such thing as God, because we live in a physical universe. If we lived in the spiritual realm where the angels are, it is impossible to deny Hashem. Angels either don't have free will, or they do in theory, but can't exercise it, because they're so, it's so obvious to them that Hashem exists. Then how can they have any free will? It's right there staring them in the face. The physical world, though, shrouds Hashem. Can't see him. So Hashem, when he created the world, wanted a perfect balance between physicality that would seek to deny or cover up Hashem's existence, and spirituality that seeks to assert his existence. And he wanted that perfect balance. So he created the universe, and it's getting larger and larger, which means it's covering up Hashem's existence more and more, until it reached that one split second, that one perfect point in space and time. Die. That's enough. Right there. That's what Hashem did when he created the universe.
Why would you say it's two balls in the eye?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I actually just saw one of the Mepharshim speak about that. That's the only reason I remembered it was two balls in the air and not one. So I just saw someone ask that question. That's a good point. It's not relevant to our discussion now, so I don't want to get sidetracked. But it's a very, very good question.
Are we going to get an answer?
Not tonight. Not tonight. You mean in the future? I don't know. I don't think we're going to come back.
Mystery.
I don't know. That's
awesome. So that's where the way the world was when it was created. The balance between Ruchnius and Gashmius, spirituality and physicality, was perfect. The world that Adam and Chava were brought into being in was exactly balanced between Ruchnius and Gashmius. We know today that that's not so. We live in a world that is far more weighted towards Gashmius, towards physicality, than Ruchnius, than spirituality. That's what eating from the tree did. By eating from the tree, it upset that balance. But that was the original world that Hashem created, that perfect balance. Kel Shakai, Hashem who says, that's enough. Meaning that they knew me as the God that keeps physicality from overwhelming the spirituality. Because that's what was happening. The physical was becoming larger, larger, larger. Ah, that's it. Not too far. We got to preserve spirituality. They knew me as the God that didn't allow the physicality to completely overwhelm the spirituality. But that's not the same thing as the God who is Hashem, who is the one who makes his words true, who you can't deny his existence, who is everything, who is HaYehovah V'yeh, was, is, and will be, who is the master of everything. That's not the same thing. Kel Shakai is a much more limiting name. I told you, I believe, then, when we learned it the first time, that the name Shakai is used when it comes from a Gemara, and it is used even today when, God forbid, there is a, let's say, a family that's undergoing a lot of tsaros, a lot of difficulties. So the phrase that is used by our sages, which we will use today, is Mi Sha'amar La'olam Dai, the one who said to the world, to the universe, that's enough. Yomar Dai should say, that's enough. Let tsaros say to these tsaros, or to the tsaros of this family. The one who said that's enough to the expansion of the universe should say that's enough to the tsaros. What's the relationship between those two things? Because tsaros, just like the expansion of the universe, seeks to deny Hashem. If you have people who are upright people, good people, and bad things are happening, why do bad things happen to good people? When that happens, especially if it happens a lot, it makes belief in Hashem very difficult. It calls into question his existence. people have a hard time accepting it. I don't understand. Why are the Rishayim, why are the evil people doing so well, and Tzaddikim people are so righteous, they're having such a hard time with life? So, the whatever reason Hashem is doing it, but we invoke the name Shakai. That's enough. The one who said, that's enough. Because we don't want these saras to overwhelm a person's ability to remain steadfastly believing in Hashem. That's enough. It's enough already. We don't push it. Hashem is saying to Moshe, the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they only knew me as Kel Shakai. They knew me as the God who, there's tzaras going on. You've got a tough, difficult life. But they knew me as the one who wouldn't let them go over the edge, who wouldn't let things fall to pieces, who kept at least enough of my presence there that they would still be able to believe in me. But they didn't know me by my name Hashem. They knew I had a name Hashem, but they never saw me use the name Hashem, because they didn't see me as the one who makes my words come true, who tears open the heavens and lets you see everything and see that there's for sure a Hashem, like he does for us at Matan Torah, we got the Torah, and the one who gives us Eretz Yisrael, and the one who has the 10 plagues and the splitting of the sea, all the open miracles that were going on and all that. They didn't see that. They didn't see that. That's the musr, that's the admonishment that Hashem is giving Moshe right here. So then, based on this, now Hashem continues and tells Moshe, but now I'm going to use the name Hashem. Now I'm going to bring about the promises that I made. They're going to start to come true. And that's what it means when it starts in Pasuk Dal, verse 4. Vagama kimosius prisi tam, and I also established my covenant with them. Laseif lahem es eretz Canaan, to give them the land of Canaan. Eis eretz megureyam asher garu vad, the land of their sojourning that they dwelled in it, they sojourned in it. So I said I was going to give it to them, but I never did it. Vigama nishamati es nakas b'nei Yisrael, I've listened to the groans of the Jewish people, Hashem Yitzrayim avidim osam, that the Egyptians are working them. Vo'ez kor es b'risi, and I have remembered my covenant. As we've said many times, Hashem never forgets. So what does it mean he remembers? It means that he decides to deal with it. He decides to make it now front and center. It's something which he is going to address. So now we're going to use the name Hashem. Now we're going to make that covenant come true. Lachain, therefore, and morally, Bnei Yisrael, tell the Bnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Your ancestors didn't seem to use my name Hashem, but I am Hashem. And you're about to witness it. You're going to see, starting with the Makkah of Dam, starting with the plague of blood, you are going to see that my name is Hashem. So four languages of Geula. Now, we know that these four languages, these four words, become the central theme of what? Of the Seder. So in what way does that manifest itself? Primarily?
The four cups.
The four cups of wine are the primary manifestation of these four words of Geula. And of course, the theme of four, the motif of four, you find throughout the Seder. The four sons, the four questions, that the four is all over the place in the Seder. But the four cups of wine are the primary realization of these four words of redemption. And they are v'hotseisi, v'hibsalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti, as it says over here.
And the dal is the delet, and that's where we put the blood.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's very good. Very good. We don't put the blood. They did it then. Yeah. Yeah.
They did. I missed it.
She said the four is dalet.
Yeah.
Dalet is four. And dalet represents the delet, the doorway. Where they put the blood.
Okay.
So, these are the four words. I'll take you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I'll save you from their work. I'll redeem you with an outstretched arm and great judgments. And I'll take you from me as a nation. Which really goes together with, and I'll be for you as a God. So these four things it really even goes together with the rest of that pasuk. Vidatem ki ani Hashem Elokeichem amotzi aschem mitachas pivlos mitzram. You'll know that I am Hashem your God who takes you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So these four words represent different gradations of their getting out of Egypt. That first of all, I will take you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So the burdens being the worst of their bondage. That doesn't mean they won't be slaves anymore, but it won't be with the sting, it won't be with the sharp pain, it won't be as bad. And then the I'll save you from the work. You won't be slaves at all. You won't have work to do at all. Now you won't be slaves. You won't have work to do. The Gaaltiaschem, and then I'll redeem you. Then I'll really take you out. You won't have any. You won't have. Then you won't be slaves. So it's. You won't have the terrible burden. You won't have work. You'll be redeemed with an outstretched arm and great judgments, which refer, of course, to the 10 plagues and to Kriyas Yam Suf, to the splitting of the sea. And finally, V'lakachtiaschem li'olam, I'll take you from me as a nation. Which goes to Matan Torah, to receiving the Torah. No, that you'll know that I am God who took you out.
Okay.
Right. So the easiest example to use of this is the Emancipation Proclamation, which is it's just a very easy comparison to what we had when we got out of Egypt versus the freeing of the slaves in America. Where, and we've mentioned this before, that when the slaves were freed in America, it was a very difficult freedom, because they were free, but they had no money, they had no possessions, they had no home, they had no land, they had no education. All they knew was how to work for their masters. So the Emancipation Proclamation technically took them out of being, they weren't slaves anymore, but they weren't really redeemed. They didn't have an identity. And what many of the slaves had to do was to go right back to their slave owners and be hired by them to work for them at ridiculously low wages that essentially made them slaves again.
Free us and take us out. End of story. You know, why do we need this verb that we were redeemed?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Really, the Hebrew word which would be most accurate to the word redeemed that you are using is podeh.
Mm-hmm, right, yeah.
Right, like podeh. Like a pidyon haben.
Right, exactly.
Right, where you give money and you get your son. Right. And here, it's not really that way. It's really, the word redeem, I guess, is not the best translation.
But what is it? What does it actually mean? I mean, I certainly can see that that's not a faithful translation. And but what is the concept there?
Geula is more than just... See, when we're waiting for Mashiach to come, we're waiting for Mashiach to come and be Goel us.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the Geula is more than just stopping the bad,
mm-hmm.
which is the first two words. The first two words are stopping the bad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Stopping the extreme bad, and then even stopping the minor bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first two words. So, it's Seisi v'Hitzalti. The Go'alti and the Lakachti are giving good.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakachti is clear, taking you as a nation, getting the identity of a nation.
Mm-hmm.
Geula would be more akin to getting out with dignity. It would be, as we know, when we left Egypt, Hashem gave us their money. Hashem let us see them being punished.
It's a quality of elevation.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So that when we're dominating for Mashiach to come and be Goel us,
mm-hmm.
it's not just, okay, the Palestinians will stop hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be an elevation. It's going to be a sense of pride, a sense of
mm-hmm.
who we are. And everybody's going to know it.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to have a relationship, a much greater connection with Hashvar for that. We talk about final redemption. I mean, the most glorious way to sanctify His Son's name is we're going to be truly His people, the world will know, because through us, Hashem, the real Kiddush Hashem, will be recognized throughout the whole world. But who will proclaim it that day is the Saint Elena Bayam Haho Yeshana Chadishma Lachad. The Gula Shalema is like we would take out when Hashem took us out of the throne, we became His nation. We accept the yoke of Shemayim upon ourselves, His kingship.
But you see, that's really the Lakachti. The fourth word, I'll take you as a nation, mm-hmm. which is referring to getting the Torah. Mm-hmm. That's really the becoming one with Hashem.
Mm-hmm. So this is a step. Language of a marriage.
Right. Exactly. Same language as a marriage. This is the step before that. Maybe like for the analogy would be to become betrothed, but it's like a. There's something in the middle. So what you're pointing out is that the word redemption, using that word in the pure translation in English, is not really the correct word. I don't know that we have a very good word for it. But that's the idea that we're trying to get at.
It must have something to do with the metaphor of the outstretched arm.
Because it's
always paired.
Right.
And
so
that's a very important piece of it.
The outstretched arm are the plagues.
But it's applied to this particular verse.
That you're going to get out, you're not just going to, it's not just there's going to be an emancipation proclamation, okay, you'll walk out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's going to be, you're going to get out. And they're gonna chase you. They're going to say, leave, get out of here. We're getting beaten for having you here. We don't want you to stay here. It's going to be a true freedom, a true leaving of bondage. That's not why we became slaves. We became slaves because Hashem told Abraham that we were going to become slaves. But while we were slaves, it's true, we did start to slip. We started to learn from our...
After Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, passed on, then we began to live what Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob...
But that's not why we became slaves. We were going to become slaves no matter what, because Hashem said it in the covenant that was going to happen.
So each...
Perhaps we did something to deserve it. And that's the exchange.
That's the exchange. That's
right. It's possible. It's possible. That's true. Now we have to stop, but I do want to make mention of the fact that there is a fifth word which was already pointed out, and that is in Pasuk Ches verse 8, "Vehebeisi eschem al haaretz." I'll bring you to the land. So I'll take you to the land. Now that's clearly another step, because v'lakachti eschem li'la'am, I'll take you for me as a nation, is getting the Torah. But then to go to Eretz Yisrael, that's another step. Now we know that's another step, because today we have the Torah. The Torah was never lost from the Jewish people. After we got the Torah, we always had it, but we didn't always have Israel. Even today, we don't really have it, not in the way that we're supposed to have it.
Okay. Yeah.
So we can exist as a nation, at least temporarily, without the fifth word. Okay. The first four, once they happened, they were forever.
Mm-hmm.
Once Hashem took us out from Egypt and we became His nation with the Torah, that can never be taken away from us. We always have that. We are Hashem's nation, period. But the fifth step of getting the land, we've had it and we haven't had it. So that fifth one is, you can't say every Pesach night that Hashem has given us five languages of Geula and we celebrate it. He gave us five, but we only have four permanently. The fifth is dependent on the time you live in. There is a discussion about the fifth cup on Pesach night. One can drink a fifth cup if one chooses to. So next week, please God, we'll start with this. We'll discuss that fifth word of Geula, Vehevesi Eschem, I'll bring you, and we'll discuss the fifth cup of the Seder. People get confused that it's not Eliyahu's cup. We'll talk about that as well. We'll talk about that, you know, where that fits in.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.